Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Celeste Embry, part of the Texas Bankers Association family. Celeste joined TBA in November of 2005. Her work with TBA primarily focuses on legislative advocacy for the 420 member banks and trust companies. She came to TBA from Countrywide Financial Corporation's Government Affairs Department, where she was responsible for Countrywide states and local government relations in Texas and several East Coast states. Prior to Countrywide, she worked in Washington, D.C. as a legislative assistant to U.S. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson. Celeste began her legal career as a general counsel to the state senator John Corona, where she concentrated on financial services and consumer lending issues. She received her bachelor's in government with honors in 1994 and her JD from the University of Texas School of Law in 1998. Celeste, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. It's happy to be here. Great to be here today.
Well, we're glad that you're joining us because you've got a unique set of skills and talents, and we've talked to a lot of different presidents and compliance officers, so it's nice to have an attorney on the show with us. So, Celeste, I know we went over a little bit of your background about how you worked in with a U.S. senator, you worked with a state senator, but how did you get transitioned to working in the finance sector? I mean, that's a little bit of a jump from like politics to finance.
I think it's a fascinating story. I mean, as you read out my bio, first of all, I can't believe it's been that long since I graduated from college and law school. I mean, I haven't changed at all. How is it almost 30 years? But when I graduated from law school, I have a degree in government. I always wanted to work at the Capitol. I'm from the state of Alabama. So before I went to law school, I worked at the Alabama legislature for the Alabama Legislative Reference Service, which is what we call Leg Council here in Texas. I love politics. I love policy. So when I graduated from law school, I didn't have a job. After I took the bar exam, I came up to the Capitol here in Austin with a stack of resumes, and I went door to door. And every office I talked to, I asked for a recommendation of two other people to talk to. Mm-hmm. So it happened that I landed in John Corona's office, and he is a very successful businessman from Dallas. And I just started working on financial services issues, and never in my life did I think I would end up in financial services. My mom has served on a bank board for over 40 years. And I thought, well, boy, does that sound boring. When you work at the Capitol and you see all of the different constituencies of issues, I have to say financial services is a really good one because there's not a whole lot of crying in banking, right? I have friends who lobby on health and human services issues. Those are really hard issues. You sit in committee hearings and hear terrible stories. Criminal justice, you hear terrible stories. Frankly, when I came in 2005 to the Texas Bankers Association before the financial crisis of 2008, everybody kind of loved their banks and their bankers. Yeah. And so it was, of course, it was then and continues to be a very noble profession. But I found that financial services issues were my knack when I worked for John Corona. And when I decided I'd had two sessions under my belt here in Austin, I thought, well, you know, President Bush was in Washington, D.C. at the time. There were so many Texans in D.C. I thought, you know, if ever I'm going to go to D.C. and see what it's like to work on Capitol Hill, now is the time to do it. So I quit my job. I sold my car because I don't know how to drive on ice and snow. Like, what an idiot I am. And I moved to D.C. And frankly, I did the same thing. I went door to door and just networked and did a series of meet and greets and was very, very fortunate to land in KBH's office. And I didn't, frankly, I didn't even work on banking issues on the Hill. I worked on telecommunications and judiciary issues, which were really interesting. I feel like it built out my resume and really gave me a feel for the city of Washington, D.C. I wouldn't change my time there for the world. But I tell you, when you hear people use the phrase inside the beltway about a mindset, it is real. It exists. And after about a year and a half, I thought, you know, like, we're not solving the world's problems here. Not everybody has got the most important job on planet Earth, but everybody was attached to their BlackBerry and sort of acted as though like their job was the most important thing ever. Mm-hmm. So I made my way back, happily made my way back to Texas, lobbied for a mortgage company for about a year, and then came to Austin and was lucky enough, fortunate enough to get hired to become the assistant general counsel back in 2005. So fast forward to 2023, and now I'm the general counsel. So if you stick around long enough, you know, they'll either ask you to leave or they'll promote from within.
Well, that's quite an adventure. I mean, Alabama, Texas, DC, Texas. I mean, you've been across the country a time or two.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we take groups to DC 3 or 4 or 5 times a year. And that time in DC that I spent as a resident was really, really helpful for me when mm-hmm. I go back to the district now, because I know where the Capitol is. I know where, you know, the House is, the Senate is. I know how to get around. I mean, it's just like any city. But when you have oftentimes 75, 100 bankers with you, it's good to look like you know where you're going.
Yeah. Good to know your way around. So then as general counsel for TBA, what is that? What do you do? I mean, are you just filing lawsuits all day? What does your job look like?
Excuse me. I'm trying to get over a little allergy thing here. Anybody who's ever been to Austin, Texas, you know, there's something in the air all the time. I'm not going to talk about Texas policy or politics, but I will say that our legislature, we are a state of 30 million people here in Texas. Our legislature meets every other year for 140 days. The 140th day of this legislative session was Monday, May 29th. So for the past, that's a long answer to your short question. For the past 5 months, I've really been focused on what's happening at the Texas Capitol. Add to that the banking crisis that happened when SVB and Signature Bank collapsed in March. And as luck would have it, we were scheduled to be in Washington as part of the American Bankers Association Washington Summit the next week. So we've been focusing a whole lot on deposit insurance issues and policies surrounding that. And then in addition to that, oh, by the way, and I'll talk a little bit about this, I'll talk more about this in a few minutes, but in the midst of all of that, then we, the Texas Bankers Association, Rio Bank, a McAllen, Texas-based bank down in the Valley, and the American Bankers Association sued the CFPB at the end of April. So there are a lot of plates spinning in the air right now. In addition to those above the fold issues, of course, I do a lot of contract review and, you know, some employment law, those types of things. So each day is a little bit different, but each of the days is very busy.
So you mentioned that you were in Washington, D.C. during the time that the two banks collapsed and FDIC insurance concerns. I mean, obviously, without, as you said, without digging too much into specific policies or politics behind it, what do you do with that? I mean, is your job just to inform and report? Are you actively lobbying for things? Are you meeting with senators? What are you doing? What's your role there?
Right. So, when we were in D.C. for the summit, we had a group of about 85 bankers with us, and we had scheduled meetings. We try to see every member of the Texas congressional delegation. So we have 38 members in the U.S. House. We have 2 senators, of course. So, you know, we try to go and get in front of each of those members. We schedule the appointments. We talk to the members. We talk to their staff. Really want them to understand what these issues mean for their banks back home. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to read the news or read your Twitter feed and think you have a grasp of the situation. But when a banker is sitting across the desk or sitting across the room from you and is talking to you about what deposit insurance means for them and what those bank failures meant in a small town in Texas or anywhere across the United States, I think it's really important that our legislators hear, not just from their constituents, but from actual bankers who know what they're talking about, you know?
So when you say we, like, you're talking literally about yourself and then all the bankers that came with you to the Capitol for that.
Correct. So we try not to take 80 members into any meeting except for our U.S. senators, and we get a special room in the Capitol Visitor Center for that. But we break up into groups of bankers from each of the 38 congressional districts, and we go in and we sit down with the legislator or we sit down with the staff, and everybody wanted to talk about those bank failures because they really were unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And people wanted to talk a lot about deposit insurance and what TVA was advocating, because it's what our bank board or our board of directors asked us to do, and we'll move on from specific policies, is, you know, we believe that a temporary account guarantee like program like existed after 2008 was appropriate at that time, really to inject some calm into the marketplace. And we had community bankers with us, and they were saying, hey, look, we're willing to pay for this. We understand the impact it will mean on our assessments, but we believe enough in the strength of the banking industry that we're willing to pay more to get this done. So we're going to continue to press on that. Whether or not it will actually happen is another thing altogether. But
we'll see. Then these community bankers that came with you, how do you select these banks to be represented? Are these banks that come to you and say, hey, I want to go? Are these banks that you've extended the invitation, or that TBA has extended the invitation to? Who decides who gets to come along?
We will take any Texas banker who wants to participate in the process. Our board has been very, very generous in the past and has allocated scholarship dollars for our first time attendees to help offset their costs, which is helpful. But I mean, honestly, it's anybody, like every meeting I go to throughout the year and I'm talking to groups of bankers, I encourage them to come to Washington when we go every spring. And if it's an odd number year in the state of Texas, I encourage them to come to Austin for our capital event here in Austin, because just like it's important for legislators to hear from their constituents in Washington or Austin, like it's also important for those constituents to do it, you know, like it's a two-way street. And so we really just encourage people to participate. There's no cutoff, you know. Our group can get as big as it wants to get. And the only limitation I have is that the dinner we always have on Monday night can only seat 110 people. Oftentimes our mantra here at TBA is staff sits last. And so as long as a banker has a seat, I'm happy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So then, well, when we were discussing like what we were going to talk about today, one of the things that we briefly mentioned was interaction with banks and the importance in your position interacting with banks and how banks can interact with you and just that communication pipeline and everything like that. Expand on that a little bit for me.
Sure. So I know that you all have had episodes in the past with Chris Furlow, our CEO, and with his peers at other state bankers associations across the country, and they talk about grassroots involvement and the importance of reaching out to your legislators. And that's very, very important. But one of the things that I think is that I think gets lost in that is that I'm a lobby hack, right? I'm a lawyer. I've never been a banker. I've worked around capitals for my entire professional career. I don't know what it is like to be a frontline bank employee. I don't know what it's like to be a lender. And so as we discuss some of these bills that are moving through the state process, whether it be in Texas or in any of the other 49 plus Puerto Rico, like there are hidden gotchas in each of these bills that unless the compliance officers or the frontline employees who are working on that issue all day, every day are paying attention, it gets lost in the process. And so I think it's really important to understand that when we talk about grassroots participation, yes, we're talking about making sure you're talking to your legislator, but we're also making sure that you're in touch with your state bankers association so that you can flag issues for them. I could give you any number of examples from Texas this session, but again, it's that notion of, hey, I've never filled out a new account agreement, and so I don't know what that agreement looks like. I can go to the statute and pull it, but when they start tinkering with what that language says, and Texas is a statutory document that you have safe harbor on if you follow. So when they start tinkering with that, it creates waves of discomfort down the pipeline. And we won't know about those waves of discomfort for the bank employees unless the bank employees are tuned in and are reading our publications or participating in our events.
So how do you hear back about these things? Like, does TBA have established like a channel of communication to get these things to you? Or is this something that you're just relying on your interactions with these bankers? How do you hear back about them?
Well, it's a good question. And there are a couple of different ways. The good news is that I've been around long enough and I have no shame. I'm not afraid to pick up the phone and call a banker and ask for help. So I don't mind picking up the phone and saying, hey, I need help with this thing. In fact, I have a call outstanding about a thing right now because I need a banker to kind of walk me through the process of how it works.
Right.
But more important than that, on Sunday afternoons during the legislative session here in Texas, I send out a state issues update to about 3,500 people. I really hope somebody reads it, at least one person. I say that tongue in cheek. People do read it. I do hear back, but it's important that people read it, you know, because they could be like, hey, wait a minute, explain that thing to me again. Right. And when I do that, then I'll get, because part of that distribution list goes to lawyers at banks also, I'll get lawyers to say, hey, did you think about asking this question or this question or this question? And usually the answer is no, again, because I've never been a banker. I've always been on the government side of things. So that's super helpful. We also do another weekly publication where we'll put out a call to action, for help in Texas. And then if you're in our grassroots network, you could get a text message from me. Mm-hmm. I'll do a broadcast and say, hey, I need you to call your legislator today, you know, and oppose the, ask for, voice your opposition, voice your support. And so I will cover the field when needed. I don't need to cry wolf all the time. And then it just become like the clapping circus monkey in the background. We're targeted in that approach.
Perfect. So the established lines of communication and everything are incredibly important, and I completely agree with that. So, I mean, you mentioned something earlier in our conversation, and I'm sure that the lines of communication played a huge element in it, but you mentioned the 1071 lawsuit against CFPB. So without getting too much into the nitty-gritty policy elements of it, I know 1071 is massively impactful on banks, and that's one of the reasons why TBA has ultimately filed the lawsuit. Talk to me a little bit about what filing a lawsuit looks like, kind of what are the elements you consider when you're filing a lawsuit, and kind of how those proceed.
So, everybody has known about Section 1071 of the Dodd-Frank Act since the Dodd-Frank Act passed 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. We all knew 1071 was coming. We all knew there was a March 31st, 2023 deadline for the CFPB to publish the final rule. They took three pages of statutory text and on March 30th of this year published 887 pages of rulemaking for those three pages of statutory text. And we went through, we knew it wasn't going to be great because we commented on the draft, the initial publication, the notice of proposed rulemaking. We knew that there was not going to be a wholesale rewrite from the time we submitted our comment letter in January of 2022 to the time they released the final rule. Frankly, the final rule has yet to be published in the Federal Register, but it was pushed out on the CFPB's website on March 30th. So we did a lot of, we talked to a lot of bankers, we talked to our leadership, and, we also have an interesting turn of events here in the state of Texas because the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is based in New Orleans, Louisiana, and is responsible for the states of Texas, Mississippi, and Louisiana, ruled that the funding structure of the CFPB is unconstitutional. And so that calls into question whether any rule promulgated by the CFPB is unconstitutional within these three states. Right. So things really were setting up for us in a good way to take a lead on this particular action. We're blessed to have the resources to really lean in on that. Our DC counsel worked very, very closely with us and initially provided some litigation points that we should contemplate and consider. Mm-hmm. And then we decided to move forward and hire local counsel and ultimately filed that suit in the Southern District of Texas where Rio Bank, which is in McAllen, is based. And so it is not something that we enter into lightly, but we really truly believe that as finalized, Section 1071 will have a drastically chilling effect on small business lending across the United States. And we believe that the intention of the rule and the reality of the ground on the rule are very, very different. So if you're trying to increase small business lending, if you're trying to incentivize more small business loans to be made, an 887 page document is not the way to do it.
Right. So really, if I'm understanding you correctly, what you're focusing on is going to be the impact that the regulation or the statute or whatever it is has on the economy or the banking industry as a whole, or depending on if it's a Texas specific thing on Texas, since you're for TBA. And then that's really what's going to determine whether or not you're going to pursue legislative action or anything along that line. Is that correct?
So our suit makes four main points. So we allege this in promulgating the rule, the CFPB violated the Constitution, both because of its unconstitutional mm-hmm. funding structure and also because it did not comply with the Administrative Procedures Act when it published the rule. We also said that the rule goes beyond the statutory scope. So the initial three-page rule had 13 data points that the CFPB was supposed to collect, and the final rule that the CFPB published on its website on the 30th of March has 81 data points and mm-hmm. sub-data fields. Next, we believe that they conducted an improper cost-benefit analysis on how much it would cost banks to comply with the rule. Mm-hmm. And then finally, they failed to take into account comments received on the statute's purpose. So in that comment period that I referenced earlier, where TBA submitted our comments in January of 2020, as did thousands of other individuals across the United States, both for and against the rule, but the CFPB seems not to have taken those comments into effect. And so what we believe is that the Southern District, the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas, should pause the implementation of the rule, at least until after the United States Supreme Court rules on this funding structure mm-hmm. case that I mentioned. That U.S. Supreme Court case is going to be heard, we believe, next term, likely in October, which means the opinion decision would be released by June of 2024. And so really, we're trying to make sure that there's that cooler heads enter into the discussion. Because I mean, when I ask banks when they're going to start, even in that third tier of compliance days, because mm-hmm. there's a structured compliance timeline, even in that third tier, I say, okay, well, when are you going to start preparing for compliance? And they said, already, we've already done it. Like, we're already spending time and resources. And so, again, it gets back to that improper cost-benefit analysis piece. Like, if I have a $80 million bank that's already spending money to figure out how to comply with this rule that they don't have to comply with until 2026, then you can only imagine what it's going to cost them as that compliance date gets closer.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I completely agree on that. So Celeste, we've covered kind of a wide range of topics today, and it's been really pleasurable talking to you, and I appreciate you joining us on the show. But I like to give my guests kind of one last opportunity, that if you could give one piece of advice. I mean, you've got a broad range of experience, and it doesn't have to be about something we talked about today, but if you could extend one piece of advice to our listeners, be they banking professionals, compliance officers, legal professionals such as yourself or what have you, what piece of advice would you extend them?
That's a great question. I probably should give a better answer, but we talk a lot at our house about out of chaos comes opportunity, or you know, event plus response equals outcome. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, especially in the legislative arena, where I cannot be held responsible for the actions taken by 181 elected officials here in the mm-hmm. state of Texas, like, I get handed lemons a lot, right? I can work as hard as I can to make my pitch and make my pitch on behalf of the banking industry in the state of Texas, but I get rolled. And so I have to figure out how to make lemonade out of it, right? And so mm-hmm. that, especially, I mean, it's an interesting week that you asked me this question, because again, the session is just less than 2 days over. And frankly, we're already mm-hmm. in a special session here in Texas, but out of chaos comes opportunity. And so I'm going to use this chaos in the state of Texas in the legislative arena, and we're going to find the opportunities for our Texas banks.
I like that. And that's perfect for today's environment, because I mean, the financial industry after COVID, after bank failures and everything like that, there's definitely a little bit of chaos. So thank you very much. Celeste, thank you very much for joining us to today's episode and taking time out of your busy day.
Of course. Happy to be here. Thank you.
For the rest of you listening, that's Banking Matters.